Thank you so much, Scott and Amy, for sharing your testimony. They're trusting God's wisdom for what to do with money. Today we are concluding our series, Testing God, and I'm going to close the series by answering the question you have asked me, you all have asked me over the last few weeks a lot, which is, did you get your money back? And I'm going to tell you the answer to that, but first let me tell you what I got back. You guys are super funny. I got lots of notes back. I got lots of encouragement, some really cool stuff, and lots of jokes about what you invested it in. One of you invested it in the Mexican drug cartel and wrote me a note assuring me that El Chapo is excited about visiting and meeting me. One of our members, she took that money and she bought ingredients for cookies and took it to her work and told people what her church was doing and raised money and brought it back. That's an amazing. I got my favorite. I have not been able to stop thinking about this for the last couple of weeks. 3 scratch-offs. Winners. I don't know how to redeem this. I thought for the last two, this person has lived rent-free in my brain for the last couple of weeks. Like, who did this? But thank you so much for participating in this. And thank you for participating in our 90-day tithe challenge, which our elders have set aside because God, this is the only place in the entire Bible where God says, test me in this. And that's been going on for 2 weeks now, 2 Sundays, and it's going to go on through the end of the year. If you give and at the end of the year, at the end of that 90 days of giving, if you can sincerely say you haven't been blessed by God in participating in that, that doesn't mean God's going to give you a raise or a new jet or a car or whatever. It means that you haven't sensed God's favor in your life because God says that's what he's going to do. So we're testing God. If you haven't sensed that at the end of those 90 days, let us know and we'll give you your money back without any questions. Now, you got to do it online or through check so we can track it. Don't give $100,000 cash, but because you're not getting that back. But the first week I started this series, I told you last year was really hard for Leslie and I because of inflation and a single income family of 7. We had found ourselves in a place where we were in debt $12,000 on credit card. And so Leslie had wanted for a long time to sign us up for Financial Peace, the Dave Ramsey program. And at the end of that, because of doing that, we had to get our finances in order. And in doing that, we discovered that our CPA in Abilene, who's a guy I went to church with, a good godly dude, but he had made a small but significant mistake on our taxes for the last 6 years. And because of that mistake and because of penalties and interest, we were going to owe the IRS $70,000. And I've told some of y'all that before, but after the CPA thought about it, him and his wife thought about it for a day or so, they called and said they were going to pay off all of that. And they did. And I got to tell you, I don't know how God works, but I'll tell you this, my own testimony, we started giving more to the church. And part of that was because, we got $70,000 because of someone's love for God. You realize that, right? They'd been following Jesus' wisdom in their lives up until that point. And so they were able to be extravagantly generous and take responsibility for something they were not legally required to. And I think that's a miracle. You may not think that's a miracle. You will never convince me otherwise. You will never convince me that's not a symptom of God's favor, of us testing God without even knowing we were testing God. And if you doubt me, I want you to go up to a middle-class person nearing retirement and ask them for $70,000. And see how that goes. And we were overwhelmed and humbled and so grateful for the provision Jesus made for us. And I've got to tell you, it grew my faith so much. It grew our faith so much. Because Jesus really does take care of our needs. He gives us our daily bread. He doesn't give us every want. And he doesn't give us what our advertisements have made us think are, needs that are really wants. But to quote the great, profound theologian, Forrest Gump, Mama said there's only so much money a man really needs, and the rest is just showing off. And now 14 months later, because of walking in the wisdom of the scriptures with our finances, we have no consumer debt, and we have a little over 2 months of savings. And what we've given to God has gone up, not down, and our priority has changed. So you remember how this series started off. This is the normal. Normal in America is broke. And this is because this is the life script that most of us are handed or just kind of absorbed from the culture around us. You live, get whatever you want, prioritize what you want. You live, and what happens is your lifestyle keeps expanding, right? Everything Amazon sells, you think you need. You live, and then if you have anything left over, you save. And then if you have anything left on top of that, you give. And the call for a follower of Jesus, because Jesus talks about this all the time, is to flip the script, to give first, because it's a reminder for your soul. It's not your money. To give first, then to save, and then to live on the rest of that. Because listen, you know this when you think of people's funerals. Nobody comes to the end of their life and thinks, I wish I would have spent more and given less. Nobody's dying breath or wish has ever been or ever will be, I should have bought the Cybertruck. Right? We know in those moments when life in this world ends, we know the truth. And the truth is, flipping the script is the way to a meaningful life because it keeps money from being more than money in your life. It keeps it from being a master. It keeps it from being a god. It keeps money just being money. All right, the wisest person who's ever lived and one of the richest men who ever lived is named King Solomon. He wrote a book, Ecclesiastes, and I think it should be required for followers of Jesus to have Ecclesiastes open when you're watching TV with advertisements. Because the message of Ecclesiastes is, if you think by acquiring or pursuing something, like if that your happiness is just in getting that next thing, you will be constantly miserable. And here's how Solomon says it in the middle of his book. He says, the lover of money will not be satisfied with money, nor will the lover of wealth with gain. This is vanity. This is meaningless. This is the and if you don't get this message, your lifestyle will keep expanding and expanding way past your income. Advertisers hope you don't get this message. A person who thinks that they can buy their happiness they're discontent, they're usually very unhappy, and they are great consumers. You are a mark for debt. Here's a scripture I hope this series has branded on you. Maybe get it tattooed where you keep your wallet. So, the rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is not an ower to the lender. The borrower is a slave to the lender. And some of you know what that feels like. I know what that feels like. When all of a sudden your income that you could have used for other things is being used to service debt. I know what that feels like. Before we took the Dave Ramsey class, you know what Leslie and I thought debt was? It was the way you got fun. That's the way you got fun stuff, was through debt. And it never dawned on me, there's a reason that Citibank has big buildings and I don't. And to justify all that, I just think, well, you know what I need is I need to make more money. And I hope you've seen in this series, this is empirical data, that making more money without a vision for your life leads to just more of the same. People who get twice as much as they want think they need twice as much more. Your lifestyle just keeps expanding. And the folks who have more want more. So making money hasn't helped those folks at all. You got to see debt the way God does. And this is, I'm not being judgy, okay? We were just here, and I hope never to go back. I hope that's in our rearview mirror. But for most of us, and I realize there's extenuating circumstances and all kinds of events that you haven't been able to prepare for yet, but you're going to. But sometimes those happen before you can prepare. But for the most of us in America, debt is evidence of something that is the opposite of the fruit of the Spirit. Patience. It's a way of saying, listen, I get the anecdotal examples of this not being that. But for most of us, it's a way of saying, God, I don't like the way you're taking care of me. Well. So we jack up our credit cards, and then we're under so much stress. So a couple of weeks ago in our Financial Peace University class, that about 20 families or 40, 45 people have signed up for, we passed around scissors. And lots of people, I mean, probably 50 credit cards we cut up. And it was, we clapped, we celebrated, we cheered, and it was a little bit like watching shackles fall off people. Followers of Jesus, you view the finances that God has let you steward, you view life differently. You view those finances as if you're in the crock pot business, not the microwave business. Because we have a different perspective on our lives and the life to come. Amen. And so we have a different perspective on money. Okay, if you have your Bibles, turn to Luke chapter 16. I'm going to show you what Jesus talks about with this. And this is a parable I've never preached before. Jesus told all kinds of parables that were kind of like an insight to what the kingdom of God was like or what God was like. He told like 30 plus parables, and 16 of them were about money. So you get, this is a really big deal to Jesus. Jesus talked about money all the time, but he never asked for money. He was not a fundraiser. Churches are not a fundraiser. I'm not a fundraiser. I want to be a disciple maker of Jesus. And since Jesus talked about money all the time, because he actually thought it was a pretty big deal, I want to talk about it. Now, this story is in Luke. If you're new to church, Luke was a first century doctor. And a few decades after all of this happened, he's a historian as well. He sat down and he wrote down all the things that happened in a chronological order so that he could make sure that this was passed on to generations to come. And one of the stories that Luke told us that Jesus said was this parable about a rich man. So a parable would be a story that didn't happen but was deeply true, right? So it's a little bit like Once Upon a Time, but a little bit more meat on the bones than that. He says, once upon a time, there was a rich man, and this guy was like a commodities trader. He had so much stuff, he had to hire someone to manage his stuff. So he hires a manager, and the guy works for him for a long time, but the rich man realizes that the manager is doing something unethical. He's not handling his business right, or he's not handling the rich man's reputation right. So he calls him in, and he fires him, and he says, you're done. However, I'm going to give you a few weeks to kind of tidy up the books, put everything in order, and then you're out of here. And the rich man's manager, he thinks to himself this verse that I have thought about ever since I wrote this sermon. The manager said to himself, what shall I do now? My master is taking away my job. And I don't know about you, but I really resonate with this verse. I'm not strong enough to dig. And I'm too ashamed to beg. I read that and I'm like, yeah, no, I get that. I've got these delicate book reading hands. I'm not strong enough to dig. I'm too ashamed to beg. And the manager thinks to himself, what am I gonna do? I wasn't expecting this. I wasn't expecting to be caught. I wasn't expecting this. What should I do now? I don't have the resources. He's very concerned about his future, and yet he finds that he has this little bit of time before he is completely fired. He has this little season of opportunity where he's going to figure out what he's going to do next. So he comes up with an idea, and this is Jesus, remember. He comes up with an idea, and he starts to call in his master's creditors, the rich man's creditors. And Jesus only gives two examples, but I'm sure there were plenty. The first one is a guy who comes in, and he says, how much do you owe my master? And he says, I owe him 900 barrels of oil. And the the servant says, here's what you do. Cross out 900 and make it 450 barrels of oil and pay it soon. And the guy was like, oh, wow. On clearance? Yeah, sure, I'd love that. You would love that. If your creditors came in and were like, mark off half. And so the guy's like, thank you so much. If there's ever anything I can do. And the manager's like, yeah, maybe there will be. And then he calls in the next guy and he's like, how much do you owe my boss? And he says, 1,000 bushels of wheat. And he says, take it, take your bill, mark it off 1,000 and make it 800. And the guy's like, what is this, a fire sale? Yeah, sure, I'd love that. Thank you. Thank you so much. Listen, if ever in the future you need some help, you come see me. And the manager's like, yeah, no, I will. And that might be sooner than you think. Because he's only got a little bit of time left. He says, sit down quickly and do this, because he's only got a small window of opportunity. Everybody in Jesus' audience, when he's first telling this, is they've got mixed emotions, right? If you're on the owing side of things, if you have debt, you're like, yeah, no, that guy sounds legit. I want to find that guy. If you're the person who is owed, you're like, what a crook. No wonder he's got to fire this guy. And the guy who has the, you know, debt slash is like, this is amazing. And the implication is he did this over and over again. Now, in the parable, when the rich guy finds out, when the boss finds out the way, you know, what the steward did, what the servant did, everybody in the audience, when Jesus is first telling this story, is thinking, oh, this is one of those vengeance stories. They can't wait to hear what the boss is going to do when he comes back. Because Jesus is a master storyteller, he's a master teacher, and he knows how to get people to lean in and pay attention. And he has scrambled the categories enough that people are confused and they're trying to figure out who represents God in this story. Because in every parable, there's someone who represents God and there's someone who represents us. And in the first century, when people are first hearing this, they're trying to understand which one is which. How does this apply to faith and Jesus and God and stuff? And they think that when the master finds out, there's going to be justice. And they're wrong. Because here's what Jesus says. The master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than the people of the light. He commended him? Is Jesus for us not being ethical? Is that what this is about? No. Here's what Jesus is saying. And he's going to pull out of the parable and teach on money that we're going to read in just a second. But here's what Jesus is saying. This guy knew that he had a brief, limited window of time and a brief moment of opportunity. And he thought through his future. And he thought through that opportunity with his future in mind. And the people who heard this story the first time, they'd be irate, they'd be upset, they'd want justice, right? So Jesus has us right where he wants us, and then he pulls out of the parable, and he begins to teach the lesson, which is how God views our money that's not really our money. And he goes on, in verse 9, he says this, in Luke 16, I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. And whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you've not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? Can you see what Jesus assumes about what we consider wealth? It's not true riches. And if you have not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you property of your own? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one or love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot, not you should not it's a bad idea, not you ought not try this. You cannot serve both God and money. And the Pharisees, who loved money, heard all this and were sneering at Jesus. And he said to them, "You are the ones who justify yourself in the eyes of others, but God knows your hearts. And what people value highly is detestable in God's sight. What is highly valuable to us is detestable in God's sight." What do you mean, Jesus? Well, I mean, I've seen people, you've seen people, Jesus knows this. People who trade their soul for gold. And in the new heavens and the new earth, it's pavement. You know that? And what Jesus is teaching us is that way we, God views how we view our money as a test for this itty bitty bitty time we have on this earth. And if we use our money as a tool to leverage this temporary and limited amount of time and treasure we have, God is saying you will be given true riches. And I love that, true riches. Because have you ever noticed that anything that's truly worth anything in this life doesn't have a price tag? You can't buy a good friend. In fact, money often messes up good friendships. You can't buy a great family. You can't buy someone's loyalty. You can't buy your character. You can't buy someone's honesty when you need a hard truth. The best and most meaningful things in this life are, like our lives, a gift. And that alone should make us reconsider the money that we have stewardship of in light of eternity. The way Jesus says it, do not store up treasures on earth, where thieves break in and steal, where moths corrupt, where rust destroys. Lay up your treasure in heaven by leveraging this itty-bitty amount of time you have in light of true riches and eternity. So one of my favorite things that we do every Sunday is the children's offering. I mean, it's great. Kids come down. We give them high fives. The praise team, we love it. It's so fun. And have you noticed how much joy it is? Like, that's what generosity is, and we're trying to imprint that. And, you know, through the years that we've done this, there have been some moments, right? Some involving my own children. but sometimes what happened is kids come in, and they throw it down, and the people who see it kind of chuckle and laugh. And sometimes there are kids who come in, and they realize, oh, I have to let go of this. And we've seen more than once a mom be like... And it's great, because what are kids but little versions of us? And does our soul, our fingers not do that? And we're trying to teach them. And so parents, be intentional about that time. I consistently forget dollar bills. Lean around and be like, hey, do you have any money? I've fleeced several of you guys for money week to week. But we're trying to train our kids in the way of Jesus when it comes to finances. Because I don't know about you, but for me, the way I found out what my dad made was by watching the check he wrote every week. I still remember it. Wrote $25 to the church every Sunday. And that's how I found out dad made $250 a week working at Wendy's. And I got to tell you, that did something to me. I saw my parents take it seriously, more than just what they said. I saw it. I knew it was important to them. A couple of months ago, Cam Huxford, who's one of my new favorite people in the world, he's been the senior pastor at Compassion Christian in Savannah, Georgia for 40 years. He just retired last month. But he helped me write this series. He gave me a lot of material and stuff to help. And one of the things that happened, he told me about, Dave Ramsey actually came to his church and preached. And they had a big financial peace thing just like we did. And at one point, there was this thing that happened. And he told Dave about it. And so Dave started using it in his training. But it happened at a Restoration Movement church in Savannah, Georgia. Said, we were starting this thing. And after financial peace was over, a few weeks later, Cam Huxford, whose real name is Thomas Campbell Huxford, by the way, got a letter. And here's the letter. This woman wrote and said, I wanted to let you know that I debated about writing this letter or not, but I decided I've been doing a lot of things I've been debating about, so why not one more? And I want to let you know I've been an atheist my whole life, and religion and God have never made much sense to me. So with that said, I just want to say thank you for allowing somebody like me to attend the financial peace class you've been offering. You hear that, somebody like me? Listen, this is the whole reason church exists. We are the embodiment of the Father chasing after the prodigal. Somebody like me, never forget that. People who serve on guest services, people who see a green bag in service, people when you're talking about your 15-second testimony or remembering your one, to pray for your one. This is who God is. Somebody like me, we've been waiting for someone like you. We're so glad you're here. I wanted to let you know, thank you for letting me have someone like me attend. My neighbor invited me because she wanted to hear Dave Ramsey preach, and she wanted me to go with her to Financial Peace University, but she didn't keep coming. She had a lot going on, and I kept going because I started going to the financial peace class, and the information is so amazing. I actually learned I can live on a budget. It's a great thing for me at this stage in my life. But the reason I wanted to send this letter is because of something a man at my table who sat at my table did. It was one of the most absurd, ridiculous things I have ever seen. You see, we're sitting at the table discussing the video, and we're all just sharing where we struggle financially. And I didn't want to share my story, but everybody else had. So I thought maybe I should too. And so I told them I was a single mom, I have two children, and that I have taken on a part-time job just to pay my car payment and insurance. And unfortunately, that keeps me from my kids till 7 o'clock every night of the week. And every dollar of that, every single dollar, goes towards servicing that payment for the car and the insurance. And once I told everybody that, there was a long pause, and that's when he did it. He reached into his pocket, he took a key off his key ring, and he threw it to me. And he told me to take the car I had back to the dealer and get rid of those payments. He said, this is a 2013 Nissan Altima, and it's yours now. And I started to cry, and so did everybody else at the table. Now I could stop this part-time job and be home with my kids. He also paid the insurance through the end of the year and moved the coverage into my name. I have never experienced anything like this. The people of this church are remarkable. Now, I don't know what I believe about, you know, a higher power and God and all that. Spoiler alert, she got baptized into Christ 2 months later. But I will never be able to tell you how much the last 3 months have meant to me and my family. I may not believe in your God fully yet, but I do believe in the people of Compassion Christian with my whole heart, sincerely. Amen. That's what true riches look like. So in our Financial Peace University class this morning, I heard Katie and Jordan Collier share a little bit of their testimony. And I want y'all to hear, if y'all could come on up, I want y'all to hear what true riches has looked like in their life. Can we give it up for Jordan and Katie? You shared it in class.
So Jordan and I have three biological children, and we were foster parents for several years, and we had just adopted our second child from foster care. And the question on everybody's mind was, are you done? Like all the time, you're done, right? You've got five kids, you're done. And our go-to answer was kind of like, we're out of room in the van. Like, yeah, we're done. We're out of room in the van. But someone kept asking, and they said, is that really your only reason? And we said, yeah, we don't have a way to transport our whole family. And probably a couple weeks later, they came back and they said, we're going to get you a van. And so you've probably seen it. We drive a 12-passenger van. They double the amounts of seats that we have, but we were able to continue to keep fostering. We later adopted a sixth child. We have a whole new member of our family because of someone else's generosity. We're closed now, but we do still use our van for youth trips and sports teams and friends and family. And anyway, it's been a big blessing. And if you ever need a ride, let us know.
Thank you, Katie. Can we give it up for the Colliers? I don't know if that humbles anybody else, but I want to be like that. That's what true riches looks like. That's what investing in eternity looks like. And here's what I want you to do. I had my intern the past two summers, Joshua Kelso. When he was in high school, he worked at Olive Garden, and he would go back in Abilene, and he would work at Olive Garden. And he said every Sunday afternoon, none of the employees wanted to work. And I happen to know Abilene's got a lot of churches and a lot of Christians. And that's who populates restaurants like Olive Garden. And I said, are people not being generous? And he said, no, it's the least generous time of the week to work. And that's heartbreaking. And I realize why, because I think we're not taking, we take Jesus seriously about other things, but we don't take him seriously about this, even though he's not trying to take anything from us. He's trying to give us true joy. He's trying to give us true wisdom to get free, to invest. So here's what I want you to do. Take this seriously. Have a vision for your life if you were faithful to Jesus' principles on finances and you did just let money be money. Have a vision for your life and look 10 years ahead. Plot out your life 3,650 days from now. If you live this out, you know what would happen? If you did this, you would have 3 to 6 months of whatever your family's run rate is in the bank. You would live with a sense of financial margin every single day. You wouldn't feel a lot of stress for an unexpected event like a job loss or medical expense because you're ready. You don't have any credit card debt. The borrower is slave to the lender. And you'd be wealthier than normal because normal in America is broke. Normal in America is slave to consumer desires that just keep getting populated each month with new stuff you want. You'd be wealthier than normal because the fruit of obedience in God is showing up in your life day after day and week after week. You'd own money, but money wouldn't own you. Maybe your kids could go to college without stifling student loans because you've taught them to save. And they're smart. They're working hard. They're working to get scholarships. And you've been saving. And you'll be able to pay off your home early. That may sound impossible in your current situation. Listen, there are plenty of people at this church who have done that. Because you've done this for 10 years. Keeping up with the Joneses doesn't push you around like everybody else. And you'll be able to save for retirement when you're an empty nester because you've been blessed with a home, but you're not addicted to stuff. And then, friends, because you've been so wise for a decade, here's what you do. If you're a parent, you get your kids 10 years older now, maybe your grandkids, and you take them to Waffle House on Christmas morning. And you go to Waffle House to give them a nutritious breakfast. Only in Arkansas can we say that's a nutritious breakfast. But it's a nutritious breakfast. And you go there and you order whatever your family wants. And then the real reason you came is because that woman who's serving you, that woman is probably, she's probably a hardworking woman who may have desperate circumstances. That's why she's working at Waffle House on a Christmas morning. So you pay your bill and you leave an envelope on the table. And you rush your family out to the car that's parked strategically so you can see this moment. As that waitress opens up that envelope, and her hands start to shake, and she begins to cry as she counts $1,000 that may just change that woman's life, but it will change your heart and your family's, because then you'll see the power of money and what it can do when you follow Jesus. So here's what happened with our experiment a couple weeks ago, giving you our savings. You gave it all back in a week or two. But you gave more than that. You gave $3,500 more than that. And that's not going to me and Leslie. Here's what we're going to do with it. If you're a teacher, at any level, college, public, private, homeschool, would you just, if you're involved in the teaching of the next generation, would you stand up now? Trust me, you're going to want to. Yeah, let's give it up for our teachers. Okay, so since this whole experiment was about investing, let's keep investing in people who are investing in others. And so we're going to practice what we're preaching today. Kids, would you go around and start giving those? That money has been transferred into $50 gift cards. And kids, where are you at? Kids, oh, here they come. All right, you see the people standing, kids. Start giving it to the people who are standing. These are $50 gift cards. And let me tell you what we're doing. We believe in you. No, keep standing unless you've got a gift card already. So what we believe in you. We believe what you're doing can make a difference in this world. And if you do it for Jesus, it can make a difference eternally. We are investing God's money in you, God's teacher. And you can use this however you want. It's God's money. And those are God's kids. And you are God's man or woman. Invest it eternally in these kids. And let us know. Let the office know. Let me know. How'd you use it? What did you do to invest the Lord's money in your calling? So back to our CPA in Abilene. Him and his wife, they paid $70,000. I've never had a more humbling thing in my life happen. There was an axe hanging over our family's head that we didn't know about. And here's what it would have meant, y'all. I would have probably had to get another job. As in, like, a different job, career. I would have had to sell our house that I grew up in, that we live in. And that came to light because we were trying to follow Jesus' wisdom on money. But it was a really humbling thing. And then 2 months ago, that guy called me out of the blue because I used to be his pastor in Abilene. And he said he had just been diagnosed with stage 4 liver failure, non-alcoholic cirrhosis of the liver, and it looked like he didn't have long to live. And he said, Jonathan, I grew up kind of in a legalistic environment. When I die, do you think I'm going to go to heaven? Have I done enough? And I told Brother Jerry what I've told a lot of you. No. That's right. You haven't done enough. Right. Nobody goes to heaven because they've done enough. That's right. We go to heaven because Jesus did for us what we couldn't do for ourselves. Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's good news. And then I said something else. Brother Jerry, you may have forgotten, but trust me, I have not. You very recently invested $70,000 in eternal security. You stored up treasure where it can't be touched by rust or moths or thieves. Nobody buys their way to heaven, but your relationship to money, according to Jesus, shows who your God really is. I think the reason Jesus says nobody can serve both God and money, not both God and sex or God and Satan. The reason Jesus says nobody can serve both God and money is because money is the chief competitor for your heart. That's right. I think maybe it's because of the security we think we have from it. But listen, one day, you are going to find that money is lying to you if you think it makes you secure. And in that moment, I realized why God let Leslie and I go through that horrible thing last year. I think it was so we could have that conversation with Brother Jerry. I don't know how God works, but I know He's always at work. And I know He's always good. And listen, church, as we close this series, if you can trust Him with your money, that's actually not your money.
That's right.
If you can trust him with that in this temporary life, you will find yourself with true riches forever. And in this life, you will be rich.
That's all right.
But you'll be rich where it counts.